And welcome to the Glacially Musical Podcast. It is beer, metal, swearing. It is a ghost cult joint podcast. Of course, I am Nick Cameron of Glacially Musical, joined by my good friend, a man who always cuts it down, who always separates everything, Keefe Chaffcutter. How we doing today, buddy?
I have some chaffing in places I can't talk about on this family program.
No, that's chafing, not chaff. Chaff is different. You separate the wheat from the chaff.
Oh, the wheat from the chaff. I always thought it was the same thing. No,
it's not the same thing. Chafing is when it, unless you're talking about a chafing dish, welcome to the delicious dish on NPR. Yeah. Become a sustaining member with a donation as little as $10 a month. I am a sustaining member of my local NPR station, just for the record. Anyway, thank you for joining us. If you are here for Queen's A Day at the Races, and we'll discuss that deeply later. If this is your first week here, thank you very much. Please give a like because you're going to love it, and give a subscribe because you're going to need it. But here's how we do these things. We have a greeting, a beer check, a vinyl check, a news check, shirt check, meat of the day. Meat of the day is, of course, A Day at the Races, which is way classier than saying I'm going to go to the track. Hey, what about Pi Oh My? That's a good horse.
God damn Pi Oh My.
Oh, uh-oh. Spoiler alert, Pi Oh My gets murdered.
I mean, if you haven't seen Sopranos by now, it's your fault.
You can spoil anything from 2005 and earlier. It's the cutoff. No, 2010. If you haven't seen anything up to 2010, you're not going to see it. So, my beer of the week, because it is beer, metal, and swearing, the aptly named Running Riot by Heavy Riff Brewing in Dogtown, St. Louis, Missouri. And yes, Keefe, you did have some when you were here.
It was quite good. I have to talk.
Finger fudge pour. And then I got the skankers all over. We got third wave ska all over this son of a bitch.
I didn't hear any pop or pour at all.
I did it. It's already done.
You gotta talk when it's your turn to talk, even while you're pouring, or else it doesn't show you.
All right.
Or we can go back to the side-by-side view. What you're seeing on your screen is not what the final result is.
Yeah, I see side-by-side.
Yeah, no, you have it wrong.
All right.
And should be speaker view. Guess what I have? I have a beer check, but I have a very special beer check, and this is really amazing. I got sent a 4-pack of the brand new non-alcoholic Kitty Pig beer by Kitty and We Are Pigs Brewery. I'm going to read you some notes here if I can read off the can. The Kitty Pig strikes terror in the hearts of those who don't like it loud. Deafeningly delicious, non-alcoholic Saskaberry Blonde, a heavy metal hybrid of flavors including Saskatoon berries, hops, and barley. It's brash, it's legendary, with a hint of sass, just like its creators, ergo Kitty.
So wait, are we supposed to read the beer sides now?
No, but because I have no reference for I barely have ever had, I've had like 5 non-alcoholic beers in my entire life, and Kitty Pig sent me this, so this is partially a review also. So here we go. Pop. And then the finger pudge pour and the plain old, I said finger pudge, like the catcher. Finger fudge pour down the, not very
oh, we're going to talk, oh wait, no, that's Carlton Fisk. Yeah, we're going to talk about Carlton Fisk today, I think.
Okay. Pour, but can't drink it because of the finger fudge. We explain, it's in the link in the description. It's a very pale looking ale, which is usually my jams. And again, non-alcoholic. So I'm going to have a sip of this. Cheers, sir.
Cheers, my friend. YouTube happy hour. And we're not going to talk about Carlton Fisk. That was 1975. We're talking about 1976 today. So, my vinyl check this week, as I'm still kind of running behind. Number one, I finally got my final Father's Day record from 2023. The Black Keys, El Camino. 3 discs. That's the cover on the CD that I had. All the business. Not going to pull them out because they're just black. And it's got the full record. And it also has a complete concert from the tour. And anybody out there listening, if you're going to do a deluxe edition of your record, that's how you get Nick to buy it. You release the record, the whole thing, and drop a concert right on top of it. And I am in, and I will never care. My next record, staying on brand, another live record, Stevie Ray Vaughan, Live Alive. It's a two-disc set. It's one of the last things he did before his untimely death in 1990. He did this, then he got sober, and then he did In Step, and then unfortunately the tragic plane crash on the Eric Clapton tour. Helicopter, yes, I apologize. I'm sorry, I was thinking about Ritchie Valens for some reason. And the Big Bopper, of course.
Well, I love in Almost Famous when the plane starts to have trouble and Russell Hammond goes, "Ooh, baby, that's what I like."
Somebody else started singing La Bamba.
Yes, yes, fucking fucked up. Just fucked up.
Completely fucked up.
And don't ever do that if you're in a crashing plane. Don't start singing songs by people who died in plane crashes. That's horrible. You're a bad friend. Go on.
May I put in my second quarter and continue like it's Mortal Kombat? Last record of the day. Van Halen, Fair Warning. Not the best record they've ever done. Not the best record of that year they had ever done, I assume. But it does have the greatest Van Halen song of all time, which is, of course, Unchained. Finally found one.
Absolutely my favorite Van Halen song, bar none, stop everything.
Completely. I finally found this at a reasonable price. I think I got it for like $15 shipped. Stevie Ray Vaughan. Oh, the price tag is gone. I think he was only like $20. The thing about the Stevie Ray Vaughan record was because I've been listening to my iTunes again, and I think I heard a Stevie Ray Vaughan tune while I was working, and it's like, wow, I don't have any Stevie Ray on vinyl. I need to fix that. And then I came across it that same weekend at Planet Score Records on Manchester Avenue in Maplewood, Missouri. I thought it was serendipitous, so of course I came home with this.
Got a rap? Did somebody do that rap first before you?
No, I just did that. That's all me.
That's impressive.
This is completely unscripted. I mean, is yours scripted?
Never. But okay. I don't know. You might be more clever than I and script your shit out. I don't know. I don't know.
No, that's lazy. That is lazy. So if you script it out, it's too easy to be good.
That's fair. I don't know if I actually checked. I think I checked this on the Weekly Ritual Ghost Cult show, and I never checked this with us. So in terms of the chronological timeline order of 2023 albums, I'm still checking. And I did a big, like, reorganization of my shelves today, and everything is now, like, at least properly resting where it should be. So when I went to go see Cannibal Corpse and Mayhem last fall...
I know them.
And a tour that I don't think came to St. Louis, Missouri.
It did not.
I'm going to say Missouri.
Do not say Missouri.
Why?
That's Wintersbone, Missouri. That's where all the meth heads are.
Oh, shit. All right.
Yeah, once you get out of the cities, they say Missouri.
Fair enough, fair enough. So when I went to go see Cannibal Corpse, they were also selling this record, the very last one they had, supposedly ever. This is the Stoner Rock supergroup with members of Cannibal Corpse, Umbilicus. This is a pretty damn good record. It's Path of a Thousand Suns. And it literally sounds like Caius Demon Cleater, the whole album.
That is my favorite band name I think I've ever heard.
Umbilicus. And look at the logo. It
sounds like something they would have come up with on The Simpsons.
So this was expensive. Now, I had already, as you know, I previously checked the Cannibal Corpse, which I had to buy signed because I didn't have one. And it was $50 signed, which I was a little insulted by. It did come, this Umbilicus record does come with a lyric sheet. And here's the members of the band, just to update you. Vernon Blake on bass, Paul Mazurkiewicz, you know him, the drummer of Cannibal Corpse, Brian Stevenson on vocals, and Taylor Nordberg, infamous producer and death metal guitarist, and produced, engineered, and maybe co-produced by Jeremy Kling, also of a million bands, not of Slipknot, of course. And then here is the vinyl. So this was like $35, and I was like, it's a lot of money for a record I'd never heard. But I was like, you know what? I bet it's awesome. And guess what? Look at this bad boy. Clear. Do you like know weird, vinyl.
That's natural. That is the natural vinyl. Yeah.
I never knew that. That is insane.
They have to actually put black color palettes in it to make it black.
Did you know? I didn't know this. And did you know? Did I check the kitty on here? Or the kitty is that?
You did.
The kitty, and also I checked the baby metal that I got a couple of weeks ago on Ghost Cult. So when I come back in a few months, I'll check the kitty here. And it's also similar to this. Very clear. So very cool, man. Path of a Thousand Suns Umbilicus Death Metal Supergroup. I'm into it. I need more Stoner Rock. I love the Stoner Rock. I have maybe more thrash and Stoner Rock and death metal than anything else. Eventually, I'd like to get my collection happening again where it's like, you know, bumping on all genres and all cylinders. But I digress. That's my
I have epic loads of doom metal, which I went through like a 2-year doom metal phase on Glacier Musical, the blog, where that was basically all I reviewed was doom metal. And it's hard for me now to actually go back and listen to it because of how much I listen to. But that's besides the point. News check for the week. It is a slow news week in my circle of influence. Not much cool stuff is happening. In fact, I am still trying. My wife is out of town this week, and she's not coming back till Saturday. So I have tonight, tomorrow, Friday, Saturday. And I'm like, oh, I'm finally going to go to a goddamn metal show. Nothing. There is no metal happening this week anywhere, and I checked all the places, at least no metal that I care enough to pay for, so that sucks. I did buy Nico Case tickets. She is starting up a new tour, then she is coming to the Sheldon this fall, which the Sheldon is a wonderful probably 500 seat theater where we saw Melissa Etheridge, we saw Nico Case there last year, and we have also seen Patty Griffin there. Patty Griffin was amazing. She did play the song she wrote with Robert Plant. He did not show up. He did not show up to do the backup vocals. I was very disappointed. But metal news, I got nothing. I've gotten about 15 emails from Metallica trying to get my money. That's about it.
Do you want to do the Pink Floyd check? Because there is some Pink Floyd related news.
Are we talking about the tour dates in America?
We are talking about David Gilmour.
David Gilmour is coming on a coast to coast American tour. He is playing to probably, he is coming to see about 70% of all Americans. By that, I mean, of course, he is playing in New York City and Los Angeles. He now has 3 shows in New York City playing Madison Square Garden, and he has 2 shows playing the Hollywood Bowl. Keefe and I were talking about this afternoon when we were texting. And I went back to look at David Gilmour's tour history as a solo artist, not including Pink Floyd, including the shows for this current tour, which is happening for his new record, which I can never remember the name of, The Luck of the Draw or something. Am I close?
Isn't it Hungry and Lock or something? Lock and Strange? Hungry and Strange?
No, that's Rattle That Lock. That was his last album.
Hunger and Strange. I don't understand.
No, it's Luck something.
Luck and Strange. Luck and Strange. Okay, Luck and Strange. Which is like, it must be some poetic shit Polly wrote, because, you know, it doesn't make sense. She's not that great a writer. I'm sorry. I'm not sorry. What do we talk about? The tickets, though.
Hang on. Let me finish. Can I finish?
Go ahead, Kanye.
Oh, God, that was Kanye's quote. Damn it.
I'm going to let you finish, but Beyonce should have won. Fuck him and the horse he rode in on forever.
Yeah, I agree. Tay-Tay for life. Not her music, just her love. I root for Tay-Tay and Jason Kelsey's romance, or Travis Kelsey, whichever the hell Kelsey it is. I don't even know.
Why not both?
It's the one who's...
What if they suddenly had a thruple with the brothers and just broke the brains of every Southern American and religious person possible? God. I know it's ill, but like, what if
they did that? No, that would ruin Tay-Tay.
What was the actor from the 80s from Wise Guy who was married to twins? Ken Wall married the Barbie twins from Penthouse. Both sisters.
Oh, my Lord. Twin sisters. I mean, Tay-Tay is little. She is a little girl. She's tiny. And then you put her with a tight end and a tackle? The bed would break.
Anyway, brother retired. He's gone from football.
Yeah, he's the one. He's on ESPN now. I bought his Funko Pop, though. They made a Funko Pop of him when he was cheering on his brother in Philadelphia
with the shirt off Buffalo. in the cold.
Yeah. I bought that. I spent $45.
And he jumped out the window.
I spent $45 on that Funko Pop. I will check it when it arrives. I also spent $85 on a Meregrin Toque Funko Pop, so that my wife could have the entirety. I think
it's Peregrin Toque. Sorry to correct your Lord of the Ringsness.
His name is Mary.
Yeah, but he's not a Toque. He's a Brandy Buck. Sorry,
Mary Wine Brandy Buck. I don't know. I don't care.
Should care if you care about Lord of the Rings. You should get it right.
I don't really care about Lord of the Rings. I thought I made that abundantly clear. Anyway, I spent $85 on him so my wife could have the entire... Maybe it was Pippin I bought. I don't know. One of the fucking hobbits that's not Frodo or Samwise.
Why do we give a shit about them?
I don't know.
I'm going to text Lawyer Wife and be like, did you know that all of the Lord of the Rings are coming back in the movies and you should make Nick sit through all of them?
You don't realize... I already told her.
Hold on yourself. That's really great.
And I told her that there's new movies coming.
There's a new a second season of the Rings of Power.
No, there is a new Peter Jackson series coming.
It doesn't need to be one. They told all the stories already.
I know they did, but you know what people like in Hollywood?
Sequels and trilogies.
Correct. New, old property that made, it's like David Lee Roth said, man, if you cover a hit song, you're halfway home. That's why they did Dance the Night Away. The narrator said, they should not have done Dance the Night Away. Where was I? Oh, yeah. David Gilmour. Let me David Gilmour up. We were talking about his tour history and all that. I did find out he did play St. Louis on the About Face tour. He played the St. Louis Kiel Opera House, which is a historic venue still standing. It is now known as Stiefel Theater, and it's holding shows again. I do not have any shows there this year, I don't believe. But he, including the Rattle That Luck Jack Drain, whatever this thing is called, tour, David Gilmour will only have played 130 solo shows total. His previous bass player, who's out there playing and doing his thing, I believe has played 130 shows on his current tour. And then Nick Mason did... He's probably done more than 130 tours just on the Nick Mason... What do they call it?
Saucer Full of Secrets.
Yeah, Nick Mason, Saucer Full of Secrets. So Dave just does not, he just doesn't really tour. He doesn't care. He's got his money. But you want to talk about ticket prices, now's your time.
Yes, okay. So, clackety clack, the thing I hate the most, I do it too. My friend Paul from the progressive metal band Prefers to Hide in the Dark. We were both former and... someday future bassist of the death metal band Salted Wounds, featuring OJ Cordy on drums, Omar, Cut This, and we're in a group thread together with the other guys in the band. Omar doesn't care about Pink Floyd, never has, per shame. Paul got two nosebleed seats for $170 each, all in ticket fees.
I was going to ask, is that all in or not?
That's all in. And then a friend of his got the floor, and not even the front, for $800 a ticket. All four shows sold out apparently in 15 minutes. And you know that again, Ticketmaster, Live Nation, the fix is in, the bots are already baked in, the reselling market, they hold back a certain amount of tickets that are just never sold. They go right to the reseller, second thing, they gouge, all these things. This is why you have to break up this monopoly, and most monopolies are terrible. And then they added a third MSG show, which makes me think they might be able to add a third Hollywood Bowl show. Now, I'm going to say that I'm going to sit tight. I don't have any money. Later in the year, as we get closer to the show and the Hollywood Bowl show gets closer, I'm going to look on apps like Game Time and StubHub and see if I can get a cheaper ticket than $800. Now, I would sit in the back of the Hollywood Bowl to see David Gilmour one more time in my life, but I certainly can't afford such an extravagance today.
I can't afford such an extravagance either. I would love to. If he comes to Chicago, I'll consider it. Just for the record, I found out how Ticketmaster's fees work on reselling recently. As I mentioned, Lawyer Wife is out of town. On Friday, we had tickets to see 38 Special, or what passes for 38 Special on her suggestion. I didn't care, but a night out is a night out. So we bought the tickets for $35, something like that, each plus fees. I think I spent $105, $110 all in on two tickets. It's a casino show, tiny room. It's barely 38 special, whatever. $35, who cares? $35, $35. I sold them for $70, 35 apiece. I wasn't trying to make money. I wasn't trying to make money off of them, just whatever. So that way I'm not eating all of it. I only got $60 back. So if you buy from the Ticketmaster resellers, you still have to pay those fees. So they got my fees, they got my new buyer's fees, and they charged me $15 in fees to sell them. So on one pair of tickets, Ticketmaster got in excess of $80. They got more in fees on those tickets because I resold them than on, they got more in those tickets on fees than they did on actual ticket price. That's just terrible. That's just terrible.
So brutal. I'm so sorry. I'm so sorry for you and everybody. That's why when like they like to pat themselves on the back ticket, like, look what we're doing. Look how much we've done. It's bullshit. Like, they're just trying to avoid getting broken up. Monopolies have to go. Is that all your news check? We did the Pink Floyd check.
Yeah, I'm good.
Here's a quick bit of news that just happened. So we don't really break news on this show, but let's just talk about it. Slipknot had, you know, a lot of Slipknot activity, as we discussed, first couple of shows under their belt with the new drummer and the new sampler. They put out new masks of all the guys, or, you know, Instagram photos of each guy's new mask. And the sampler guy is just sampler guy. I'm not kidding. Samples and media is his own, in the name next to his photo. So they're keeping that a secret. We know Eloy Casagrande is confirmed as a drummer. And today, they've been using this Long May You Die tagline in some of their marketing materials the last month. And now they are putting out, it's not clear if a song is coming, Long May You Die, but they have recorded a new song with Eloy called Long May You Die. And so perhaps we're getting a new song imminently. Perhaps they're just crowing about studio activity that they have done leading up to this time. It's pretty exciting. Again, we try to highlight and discuss past glacially musical subject matter in the news. But it is a bit of a light week the last couple of weeks.
That reminds me, did we talk about the Motley Crue new single?
We did, and it's horrible. And okay. I went nuts about it. It's fucking terrible.
It is fucking terrible. I just couldn't remember.
Their performance in New York was fuck terrible. Why would you go see them, of all places, in a tiny club where there's no covering up how bad they are live? All of them are bad.
Every time that there's a Motley Crue show in this town, lawyer wife asked me, oh, should we go? Do we want to go see Motley Crue? And I'm like, woman, we have seen them two times. I think it's two times. I don't know. It's at least one, because she wanted to go and she tried to leave by the second song.
Here. I'm going to do the, you ever see Stranger Than Fiction with Will Ferrell and Emma Thompson?
No. I would like to, but I have not.
You really should, especially lawyer wife, I think would find it fascinating. She's highly intelligent and really fun. I like your wife. And your kid. It's weird. I don't like anybody's wife or kid, but I like yours.
I choose my people well.
You did. You sure? You chose me. So, and I chose you back. So, best friends. Anyway.
That was last week.
Stranger Than Fiction. I know. Stranger Than Fiction has a narration in it that Emma Thompson is like the narrator of the movie. I don't want to spoil it for you. But
She would love that. She loves Emma Thompson.
Yeah, Emma Thompson's great. Dustin Hoffman is in it. He's pretty good. And so, if you've never seen, I used to say, if you've never seen Motley Crue, like 10, 15 years ago, even then, they were still terrible. I was like, you should go. If you've never seen them, you want to sing Home Sweet Home with the whole arena, go see them. If you've never seen Motley Crue, as you hear the sound of my voice, if you look into my eyes on YouTube, Glacially Musical at YouTube, don't go see Motley Crue ever again, or never, ever. They're so bad. It's a disservice to anyone that loves the band. Do not go see them.
I believe I have been to Motley Crue shows three times. You may notice I didn't say I've seen them three times, because I did not finish one show. I couldn't get through it. Yeah.
I have managed to see Motley Crue as a solo headline band one time. Other times I went to festivals and things they were at where I didn't have to suffer only through them. I could leave, go take a leak, and come back and see other bands. Or... yeah, like I went one time when they played like an Ozfest and it was Motley Crue was the second headliner beside Ozzy. And we saw all of them. And I was like, this... And, like, Tommy Lee burned his hand with a Roman candle. And they had to get Morgan Rose from Seven Dust and Joey Kramer. And Joey Kramer, they bring him on to do Home Sweet Home. He doesn't know the song. And Tommy's literally on stage with a drumstick and his hand in a bandage. Right? His hand is bandaged up. Looks like a giant... Like a cartoon. And
he's got really one drumstick. That's really unfortunate because he's the one person in that band that can actually still perform.
No, he can't. No, he can't. He's on tape. His drums are on tape. He can't perform.
He could at the time, at least.
If you think about Alex Van Halen is a little bit older than Tommy Lee, right? I'm not saying that who's a better drummer historically, but I'm just saying, like, physical, lanky, powerful drummers in their prime. You know that, like, Alex Van Halen can't get out of bed without, like, a girdle and neck brace forever. Right, he's injured permanently, like permanent drumming injuries.
Well, think about how Lars Ulrich takes,
right?
What is it, 2 hours to get ready for a show?
Like 8 hours to get ready for a show, but he plays for 2 hours before they go play the show. It's a miracle he doesn't die.
Yeah,
he
I know.
He went to a complete vegan diet. He has body work done every day. He's got a masseuse and a trainer and a Peloton they bring with them everywhere with his own special program in it. And like...
I wish I had my own Peloton program money. That'd be a lot. That's got to be a lot. Anyway,
that's this news story. Let's move it on.
Yeah. Shirt check for the week. I am rocking my MC Chris t-shirt. I had this shirt for quite a while. Got it the first time I saw him back in 2011. Unfortunately, he's coming to town and I'm going to have to miss it because I have to go pick up my kid at the airport in Chicago. So he's going to be in Illinois. I'm going to be in Illinois. He's going to be in Southern. I'm going to be in Northern. So, it's what it is.
How did you manage to hit the microphone when you didn't check a vinyl, but you did without the vinyl?
Because I had to move the microphone forward so I could...
Anyway.
I do what I do.
Olaf, Berserker. Berserker. My love for you is like a truck berserker. I got a new my classic historic Berserker shirt from like 20 years ago was robbed by my evil ex-girlfriend. Not my good ex-girlfriend, my evil ex-girlfriend stole my Berserker shirt. So I don't have it anymore. But I have
my
this
psycho
one now.
Ex stole my collection of antique Zippo lighters.
Son of a bitch. Let's go kill
them. She knew they meant a lot to me.
Assholes. But anyway, shirt check done, news check done, vinyl check done, beer check done. You know what that means.
All righty. Carlton Fisk is up at the plate, and he's going to start waving his arms. Okay, it has nothing to do with this. It's not even the right year, I'm sorry.
Just to give you the right year sports highlights now we're going to do the sports check. 1976, Pittsburgh Steelers win the Super Bowl 10 over Dallas Cowboys. Lynn Swann is the MVP. Tony Dorsett wins the Heisman Trophy, future Dallas Cowboy. How did that happen? No one. Australian rules football. No one cares. Olympics. No one cares. Baseball. Mike Schmidt. No. The World Series. The Cincinnati Big Red Machine beat the Yankees 4-0 in a sweep for their second straight repeat championship.
The Reds were really good around this time.
They were so good, and they beat.
They had
the
Johnny Bench and Pete Rose, whose book I'm reading right now. And you want to talk about a clusterfuck of a brain? This was even edited by somebody else, and I can't follow it. It's like some fever dream of a man on his deathbed.
That's crazy. Yankees get to the World Series on the strength of Sparky Lyle breaking Hoyt Wilhelm's American League record. Career record of 154 saves, which I think now has been like well passed by a bunch of guys, including
Lee Smith had like 250 for a while, which was the
Mariano,
record. He broke that at St. Louis.
Mariano Rivera is up there, if not at the top. And then just let's talk about in boxing, also Yankees related. At Yankee Stadium in the Bronx, my hometown, in case you didn't know, I'm from the Bronx of New York. Muhammad Ali won a controversial 15-round decision over Ken Norton to keep his world heavyweight title. So not the Carlton Fisk home run.
I know. I wanted it to be that one. I love that. I love that. And the best part is it's like the Monday Night Miracle for the Blues. Are you familiar with the Monday Night Miracle? You know, Blues are down in the conference finals, the first time in the conference finals in 20 years. And the first time in the third round in 20 years. They didn't have the conference finals back when they went to the first. Anyway.
Believe the new Monday Night Miracle is when the Jets beat the Dolphins in overtime on a touchdown pass to an offensive tackle.
We also have the Midnight Miracle when Jeff Courtnall runs into Jamie Storr, knocking him out of the game, and at which point he gets a 2-minute minor for that. And then a dude on the Kings drops his gloves and beats the holy living hell out of him. But Jeff Cortinall, being the team player he is, took the beating for the team. And then the other guy got 2-5 in a game for the beating. And then they came back to win, to sweep. Anyway, so Monday Night Miracle, they're down 3-0 going into the third period with a trip to the Stanley Cup Finals on the line. And the Blues come back somehow to win it in the third period, only to just screw the pooch the next night. And that's Carlton Fisk's home run. It's this amazing moment that is ultimately meaningless. Albert Pujols had a home run off Brad Lidge in 2005 that was the same way. He hits this amazing no-doubter, 400 feet in the air, 780 feet straight out. And then they lost the next game to lose the series.
By the way, my Rangers are going into game. They were up 3-0. They lost 2. And now they're going back to Carolina in the hockey round 2 for, I mean, if they lose game 6, they're not winning in 7.
Yeah, I would totally not be worried about this at all.
Worried. And apparently the Hurricanes are very good. They were second to the Rangers in the points for the year.
The Hurricanes only go one of two ways. They go to the third or fourth round, or they don't get in. So I'd be really concerned if I were rooting against them. Anyway, so who won the Stanley Cup in 1976? Probably the Canadiens or the Flyers. I think it was the Flyers.
Hockey does matter to me. So let's see. I might have lost it. I know.
It was the Canadiens. The Canadiens beat the Flyers. That was the Flyers were about, the Broad Street Bullies are about to have their third in a row in gentlemanly hockey. One out. And that team was backstopped by a young Ken Dryden. Man, all the Hall of Famers that played in that series, lots of them.
Right, and then in basketball, somehow, not that I care, the Celtics, I was 4, the Celtics beat the Phoenix Suns. It's not even like the Celtics I can name. It's Bill Russell, but I can't name the other Celtics who were all famous in the 80s. They didn't have any of those.
I didn't even know the Phoenix Suns were that old.
I guess so. Huh. And the Nets won in the ABA, but who cares?
The St. Louis Spirits did nothing, I'm sure.
The ABA basketballs were fresh, though. They should have kept those in the NBA.
Do you know that there's only one ABA team that made any money? It was the St. Louis Spirits.
Really?
Because the owners made a deal with the NBA. The NBA didn't want to bring in St. Louis. That was the whole plan of the ABA. Was same with the WHA. Just get into the – be a big enough thorn that they bring us all in. Well, they said to St. Louis, we're not bringing you in, but we're going to give you 1% or 2% of our TV deals in perpetuity. In 1976, I mean, that's like $8. However, when it gets to like 2005 and they're paying these two brothers from St. Louis billions of dollars every year, they finally ended up buying them out. And that's why we'll never get a team here. Because they hate us, because we took a lot of money out of their pockets. Anyway, so it's 1976. We have a change in the guard in the United States presidency. Jimmy Carter becomes president, probably the kindest and gentlest president the United States has ever had. Great man who is actually in hospice right now. So thoughts and prayers are with you, Mr. Carter. You are a great man. Great man. Married to his wife his entire time. Still did Habitat for Humanity up until very recently. And the world is changing. The Led Zeppelin at this point in time is basically over. In 3 years, they're going to have one more tour. And that's going to be about it.
Presence comes out this year. I'm going to do the albums every show now. I'm going to be like, what other albums came out the same time as X album we're reviewing? So hold on with
fair.
Other bands, because I have a whole thing.
Okay, I'll stop that. I'll let you take over, because I'm just
going to take over. I want you to set the thing up.
Okay. So it's a Kisses Beth Saves Destroy. Oh, I did it again. God damn it. I got nothing.
Okay,
you take
that's
over.
That's okay. Oh, man. Off of the strength of, off of the strength of A Night at the Opera, which we discussed last week, and you should check out because it's surprising how not great that album is. Despite having two of the best ever Queen songs, maybe the best ever Queen song, and two or three other bangers, it's a very weak album. In our opinion, which you definitely need to hear to understand this episode. So if you're hearing this episode, don't necessarily turn it off, but go back and listen to the other one. But one thing that you should know is that now Queen has 3, 4, 5 humongous hits that they were already an arena band at a time when not that many bands could play arenas.
It's really important to note that the arena band concept only really lasted for about 20 years. We're kind of out of that. The only bands playing arenas now are legacy artists. You have Ghost playing arenas, and that's about it.
Ghost just started doing arenas. They've done a few. I suspect on their, because like, see, like the way you do it is you do a first few shows to test it out. And when I say arenas, it's not a sellout of 22,000 seats. It's usually like the bottom of the arena.
When I say arena, I mean anything from 5,000 to 20,000. If it's got a roof.
No, I mean like over 10,000 to me is a legitimate arena.
I mean, if you're playing arena shows, you if you're lucky enough, you're also got enough demand where you're playing Knickerbocker Arena or the Family Arena in St. Charles. I'm just talking about you're not playing the Sheds, because the Sheds are a different deal. Even though the Sheds hold more people, it is more prestigious to play an arena, and it is better to go to an arena show than a Shed show any day of the week. I will say that till I die. But the arena era was very, very short, because it was in 1975-ish, 94-5 is when bands start playing arenas, when these extra large theaters start kind of going by the wayside. And when rock music gets popular enough for these people to be able to pull in 10,000, 15,000, or even 7,000 people into an arena, do you realize how big of a band you need to be? Carcass, death metal legends. Now, I mean, it's death metal, but if you look at their Facebook page right now, they've got 5 million fans. When they tour America, they play 1,000 seaters.
Yeah, social media, we've now learned, does not equal seats, asses in seats. It does not.
No, it doesn't, but that many people know them. Slayer, the third biggest band of the big three, never really played arenas.
Well, they did it on the final tour. And I suspect
the final tour with a cavalcade of like 18 bands.
Yeah, of all the Kerry King and Slayer news this week, which there was some, we talked so much about it last week, or I did. I didn't want to go there, but now that you brought it up, this three shows this year is to test the waters. So what I think is going to happen, I don't see them doing extensive months and months of touring. I think you could get like Slayer is going to do Western Europe for 20 days and do all arenas, O2 Arena, things like that. Slayer's going to do North America and do a repeat of that farewell tour with a Pantera and some other bigger bands.
That sounds about exactly right. That's about
the best they can hope to do, and they will not do a sellout except New York, Chicago, L.A., Houston, things like that. They will do 10,000, 12,000, 14,000. They will not totally blot out the venue, but if you could sell 14,000 tickets, you're making millions of dollars on tour. So
yes, you are. And so it's around this time the arena era starts for real. And it kind of fizzles out by 1995 because two reasons. One, the American musical landscape changed where we were no longer getting behind artists like we used to. And two, the Shed era began. As the Shed era began, we are now in post-Shed era where Ticketmaster owns Live Nation, who owns the Sheds. So getting into an arena now is super hard.
Yo, fair enough. Let's just talk for a second. So we said A Night at the Opera has got great songs, but it's not a great album. They go Correct. And start touring arenas even more. The demand for them is through the roof. They're sometimes doing 2-3 shows in one venue for, you know, at a time. They play all over the world.
And when you can do that, when you can play 3 shows in one venue, you basically you quadruple how much money you make. You would make enough money for 4 shows on 3 because you've only got 1 build up and 1 breakdown. So you're not paying.
That still holds true today, which is crazy.
Yeah, and you're not paying all the, because it takes 12 hours for them to do that up and down. So they're working for 20 hours basically every time that show. Every time you see a stage in an arena, a crew works 20 hours to get it up and get it down.
And so
and
my
it's
new
a big crew.
It is a big group. My new favorite thing to do is, we started doing this recently, is what are the other records that came out before we analyze A Night at the A Day at the Races, again named for Marx Brothers, right? What other records came out in 1976? A couple of ones you might have heard of. I'm not sure if these bands are ever going to make it, but maybe someday. Station to Station, David Bowie. Hotel California, The Eagles. Agents of Fortune, Blue Oyster Cult, a personal favorite. The aforementioned Destroyer by Kiss, arguably the best Kiss record that's not alive.
It is not the best Kiss record.
Whatever.
This doesn't have good records. I said it.
Black and Blue Rolling Stones, eh.
I think I have that.
Songs in the Key of Life, Stevie Wonder, his best record. Trick of the Tail, Genesis, good record. Jailbreak, Thin Lizzy.
I don't have that.
2112, Rush.
Got that.
Aerosmith's second best record, Rocks.
Got that.
That's the name of the album, not just an adjective. Boston, Adverb. Self-titled debut.
Ew.
Oh, what?
Ew.
You did not say ew to Boston.
I said ew.
You have Journey records. Be quiet.
My wife has Journey records.
They're in your house that you helped pay for. Sad Wings of Destiny, Judas Priest.
Yeah.
Night Moves, Bob Seger and the Silver Bullet Band.
Hall and of Live Famer. Bullet. And Live Bullet. Bullet. Which I have. I have Live Bullet, which is amazing.
Fly Like an Eagle, Steve Miller Band, Hall of Famer.
80 years old this year.
Is he? Blondie, debut album. Vandergraaf Generator, not the most famous band, but a very important band. Still Life.
Have you heard about this? Have you heard this album? High Voltage by AC/DC.
Alice Cooper Goes to Hell, Alice Cooper.
That is not a great record.
That's okay. Turnstiles, Billy Joel is a great record. Ramones, self-titled debut. Left Overture by Kansas. These are some of the best records ever made.
Yeah.
Radio Ethiopia. Phantom Comes Alive is later, and fuck that record. And, you know, just saying, again, these are some Rainbow Rising. Earth, Wind, and Fire, Spirit.
Wings Over America.
Ugh, what are you doing?
Blue Moves by Elton John.
Yeah, it's not that great. Right.
I don't really know Elton John that well.
Yeah. Anyway, Frampton Comes Alive is 76, but fuck that guy.
I know.
Anyway, a lot of great records came out at this time. And here's Queen.
Poised. Well, when you have 400 record labels going all at once that are not owned by two companies... You get a plethora of piñatas.
That is a fact. So I mean, that's all the buildup I have. Queen becomes bigger on the strength of Bohemian Rhapsody. They continue to do arenas, and they basically kind of had the roadmap for the next record. The artwork is very similar. You know, like
it's a sequel record. I don't know if they meant it that way, but it definitely is.
Well, I think they had the idea. It's even
recorded the same way. A Night at the Opera was recorded over several months because they would record for a couple songs and then they'd get called out on tour.
Touring was so lucrative for them, they could not stop touring.
No matter what anybody tells you in this day and age, touring has always been where the money is.
By the way, just to correct you.
Oh, no.
Also in 1976, an incredible and important record by Led Zeppelin. Led Zeppelin's gone in 3 years. Led Zeppelin had one of their best records in 1976, Presence. Probably, maybe arguably their best record, actually, in some ways. That's not a bunch of stolen music and other things. Come on. Presence is in the top 3 or 4 Zeppelin albums. Come on.
Well, they only have 9, I mean.
Well, so the top 3 or 4 is the upper half, bro. Like, I'm sorry, simple math wins again. This record is going to be fucking 50 years old in a year and a half. I just, my brain can't take it.
No good. So yeah, again, they're touring while recording and recording while they're touring. And they, you know, they had a system. And I mean, there's really not a whole lot else to talk about. If you are ready to go to track by track.
They did produce this themselves to save money.
Yes, yes, yes. Oh, that's so why they
scary,
did it?
No scary guy anymore producing.
Let's see what. Oh God, we don't gotta look him up, do we?
Don't look it up again, please. Stop.
This is on EMI Elektra, so we're on really high hoity-toity labels. They were there last time too.
Yeah, EMI is arguably the biggest record label in the world at this time. With they have Queen, they have Pink Floyd, like in America. Like, how big can you be in the 70s? This is as big as it gets.
True that. So let's take a look here. This record has 10 tracks. The preceding had 12.
12, and 8 of them or 7 of them are not good.
Yeah.
Even if we both include the ones we fought about, so that's 5, there's still 7 that are not.
Yeah, I mean, that is still not a good. It's, and I think it's really, really apropos that I checked Van Halen's worst best record today. Fair warning.
It's fair enough.
But on this one, they, like the first record, they start off with a banger. And this one is written by Dr. Sir Brian May, CBE. He writes this when he's in it, when he's getting his PhD, he writes a song called Tie Your Mother Down. It's written on a Spanish flamenco guitar. He brings it to the band. He wanted to change the chorus, and Freddie says, no, mate, that's golden. And so we get this cool little banger. Great song, great opener.
I like that Tie Your Mother Down does the thing that Nick likes, where they have an intro and it's part of the song. It's not a separate track.
Yes, do it right.
Finally did it right. Finally, took this long.
Somebody did.
Tie Your Mother Down is a hit also, and is often, was often transcribed and in like guitar world and guitar player, like play like Brian May, play Tie Your Mother Down. And they played it live all the time.
This album has 10 tracks, as I mentioned. How many singles, Keefe?
Five?
Yeah. Half of the record it was released as a single. And what does it mean when you just keep pumping out singles on a record?
It's selling.
It's selling like crazy.
And you're touring to sell that record and promote that record.
Yep. Jason Newsted put it in 19 during the Metallica Behind the Music. They did not want to keep touring Behind the Black album. But it just kept selling, and they just kept releasing singles, so they just had to keep going. And that's what happens when you hit it, when you're on the real roller coaster. That's what happens. Now you got to go to the Philippines and play a show in Manila. You never thought about Manila before, but now you got to think about Manila. Then we move on and do the next track, a Freddie Mercury sap fest. You Take My Breath Away. Hey, look.
To be confused with Berlin, the band.
Not to be confused with Lazing on a Sunday Afternoon, I'm going to point out. And this song sucks too.
I don't need this. It's not the worst thing I've ever heard, but it's not. It's just not a good. Again, it's like the peak and down. The peak and down.
No, it is not the worst thing I've ever heard. We heard that last week. It was called Lazing on a Sunday Afternoon. Moving on. Back to the rotating vocalistas. Vocalistos? Whatever. Whatever, Nick. You're an idiot. Stop it. Long Away by Brian May. And here we have my first Brian May track that he sang, and I was an idiot, and I didn't know he sang at all to begin with, and he sung on every album. This is the first one that I would have said, wait a minute, that's not Freddie. There is a distinct voice. I like the distinctiveness in the voice. However, the song didn't need it.
I guess it's solid. Long Away also was a single, and probably the first single beside I'm in Love with My Car to be a single with a non-Freddie lead vocal. And it's a good song. It's not a bad song. It certainly makes up for the last one. Gosh.
It is a lot better than the previous. So, yes, we are on the way up. And while Queen goes up, what happens when Queen goes up? The Millionaire Waltz. Thud.
Yeah, there's some clunkers on here. Maybe side one is the Soft Underbelly somehow. I don't know.
The Soft Underbelly can be anywhere. It doesn't have to. It's usually side two. It's usually the middle of side two. That's where you put this stuff. Oh, but don't worry. They got some stuff over there that we're going to talk about. Roger Taylor.
Yeah. Millionaire's Waltz, another one. I think this is technically possibly a song referencing, again, their financial woes and troubles and getting kind of jerked by the, you know, the man. Again, this one's about John Reed. The last one had the one about Norman Sheffield.
Yeah, you know what? Black Sabbath did a whole record about how they were getting screwed over by their managers and record label. And you know what? That album sucks ass. You're going to sing about opera and goofy crap and profits and, you know, water pistols because you're crazy? That's fine. Don't bring the law and legal matters into this. You're just gonna confuse us. Moving on into You and I, a John Deacon pen track that I don't remember.
Yeah, it's okay. I listened to this a few times today and yesterday, and this song, it's John Deacon on piano and acoustic guitar, was the B-side to Tie Your Mother Down, never ever played live, so they didn't like it either.
And you know what? If you are a band and you've written an album and you've put it out, not now because, you know, it's a different world now, you should have played every song off of every record at least once. If you don't play it ever, I assume you just don't like it. Or it's an 8 minute and 38 second instrumental. I'm sorry, 9 minute and 48 second instrumental with one stanza written by Cliff Burton. So...
Not leave Metallica out of the show ever. Nick Cameron, everyone.
I'm trying to get the SEO marks. If we talk about Metallica, it gets tagged as Metallica.
Maybe, maybe. I'm not sure if that works on...
I don't think it does, but...
It'll work in the blog. I'll make sure to tag it in the blog.
There we go. Flip the record.
Flip the record.
And now we get the best song on the record.
We get maybe the best song... except for a couple, one of their best of the decade.
It's like a top five Queen song, period. This is Freddie's Ode to Love. And there's always something wonderful about rock stars engaging in so much casual sex, singing about monogamy and living happily ever after.
You think this song is a happy love song? This is the most depressing song I can ever think of. This is a brutal.
It's loneliness, and he's
Phil Collins against all odds. This is like, hello, Suicide Hotline, please hold. This song is like depressing.
This is Paul Stanley's Move On, except really good.
Please don't compare anything about Queen to Kiss.
I know, that's unfair.
Yeah, this is the best song on the record, the third or fourth best song in their whole history. This is my favorite Queen song far and away by far. And here's a fun and depressing memory. The last time that I saw Taylor Hawkins of the Foo Fighters alive was at Bottle Rock Napa 3 years ago. And they performed this with Dave Grohl on drums and Taylor Hawkins on lead vocals. And he fucking killed it singing like Freddie. And Taylor was doing like a lot of like Grohlisms on the mic, like, oh, but I'm gonna take over the show now, so I'm gonna be funny like Dave. And he's like, there's two people in the whole world who play the best, he called, like, whatever he called the drum pattern. He was like, this double quintuple fill. He's like, there's two people in the entire world who can pull it off properly. One is Roger Taylor and the other is David Grohl, and you're about to hear David Grohl play Roger Taylor doing that fill.
I think I saw a video of that.
I'm sure I sent it to you because I was like,
that checks out.
It's still that tracks. I love it so much. I love this song so much.
It's Dave Grohl, just for the record, very underrated musician in my humble opinion.
For sure, for sure. I am going to say this is one last thing. I do feel like, I'm sure it was natural. The song is a banger. It's incredible. But I also kind of feel like, hey, you know, on that last record, you guys, you had a Bohemian Rhapsody with a lot of singing. And if you do another one, that would make us really happy and we could sell a lot more records.
Are you saying that there's some hit fishing going on here?
You don't think so a little? I don't see the similarities.
I didn't say that.
Even in a similar place on the record almost. Like, it's on side B. No,
my question was a question. It was not a statement. I ask questions because I don't know the answer. Actually, that's a lie, because they know exactly what you're saying. Yeah, oh yeah, they're completely hit fishing on this. Freddie Mercury at his romantic, nostalgic best. That's what Bohemian Rhapsody was. I mean, it was a very tongue-in-cheek, look at how fancy we are. We know operas. That was their Iron Maiden singing about Dune and, you know, The Prisoner. You know, they're hearkening back to all this amazing culture. Well, they just went one more. So now we have Freddie Mercury hearkening to the golden age of Broadway. This is the song that goes like this from every heartsick Broadway play you've ever seen. Yeah, hit fishing, completely hit fishing.
Yeah, it's a great song. And again, there's that super high note. It's probably the highest note Freddie ever sang.
The aforementioned Destroyer has Beth, and Beth has Kiss's Piano Ballad. Alice Cooper's goes to hell. Alice Cooper Goes to Hell has a piano ballad on it. I mean, this is the year of the ballad. So yeah, those
and
guys.
A little band called Boston has one, by the way.
I will request, seriously, we don't discuss Boston.
love Boston so much.
That's fine. I don't want to hear about it, and I don't want to talk about it.
Period. Moving on. By the way, somehow Somebody to Love was kept from the number one chart spot. Not that it matters. 13 on the U.S. charts. That kept from the number one spot on the charts in Britain by Shawadi Wadi. Are you fucking serious, England? What the fuck?
What is Shawadi Wadi?
You don't know Shawadi Wadi, Under the Moon of Love?
No.
Go look it up. It's a good song.
I listen to good songs.
Well, it's not a bad song, but why did
Let me rephrase. I listen to the good songs that I know. Because, I mean, somebody asked me, you know, recently, Glenn Hughes, you love Glenn Hughes. Yes, I do. He put out an album last year. Yes, he did. I'm not going to buy it because it's not on vinyl. He's like, well, so you're just going to completely get rid of something because it's not on vinyl? Yeah, I don't have enough time in the day to listen to the albums in my inbox, much less what's on my shelf already. So if you don't put it out on vinyl, no, I don't got to bother. You help me out. Anyway, moving on. Now we got another song penned by Sir Dr. Brian May, CBE, with a PhD in astrophysics. White Man. I don't know what they were thinking. Still kind of a good song, though. Nice little rocker. You know, a little prophet songy, but not as epic-y. Just kind of doing their thing.
It's their Run to the Hills. It's there to tame a land. I don't know why Iron Maiden has so many of those
songs. It is not there to tame a land. That is them doing Dune, sir. Sorry. And because of that song, I got an A on a paper on Dune when I only got 200 pages into that 800-page book. But I listened to Tame a Land on my cassette tape. So
it's their Run to the Hills. I don't need this. I think there's a lot of apologizing by Brits in music for British colonialism. It is a good song. It's interesting that they did it at all because it doesn't really make sense to follow Somebody to Love with this song. But okay, fine.
Well, and Queen is not a band that feels ways about things, you know?
They feel ways about love and girls and music. They don't feel anything else. They feel nothing.
Right. They feel nothing. They write, ooh, baby, baby, I love you. Ooh, baby, I love your way. They are as deep as Peter Frampton.
No, they're deeper than Peter Frampton. Peter Frampton sucks, bro. I don't care. Anyway.
No, he does not. Peter Frampton is a national treasure.
You know how I know this is good weed? This is the Crosby weed.
He was on The Simpsons. I got that at Pink Floyd's yard sale. And now Sonic Youth is in my cooler. Come on, that is right there.
But that's the best. That's the high point of his career. Almost famous.
I agree. I completely agree.
None of his music matters to me. None of it.
The best point in his highest point in his career is him talking about Pink Floyd on The Simpsons. Yes, that is number one. That is a number one Duke of New York, Peter Frampton. And the second high point in his career was smoking fake pot with Mitch Hedberg on a movie set. Almost famous,
Reg. Take good care of him, Reg.
$50 and a case of Heineken. Anyway,
what beer? What kind of beer was it? Kate Hudson, I love you so much.
Was it good beer?
Do you know that Kate Hudson has a rock record coming out this week where she's going to do a bunch of rock and alternative rock covers?
I did not. I'm not terribly interested.
I'm super interested in it now.
Okay.
I might even review it. Go ahead.
All right. Let's move on to good old-fashioned Lover Boy. This one is recorded with a recording engineer who kind of like hung out with him for a few months. I don't really need this one either. Side two is not spectacular.
These first three songs are solid. Obviously, Somebody Who Loves a 10. This is not a bad song. They played it live a lot. It was also kind of like, you know, a hit song. And it's kind of like a lot of other Queen songs about lust and love, right? It's like remarkable.
It's okay. It's been done. They've done this song a bunch of times. And speaking of songs they have already done, we now move on into the Roger Taylor penned and sung song, Drowse. If he changed the lyrics of Drowse with I'm in love with my car, and vice versa, I wouldn't know the difference. It's the exact same stupid song. Except the lyrics are less stupid this time. But it's the same goddamn song. Brian May plays it. It's all the same. It's the same song.
Do you do one of the Brian May solo records for Department of Metal Antiquities?
I have not.
With the beleaguered Duncan Evans.
I feel bad for him enough already.
I feel bad for him all the time. But like, this isn't a good song either. And Roger, who is incredibly talented, I said this many times, this is not good. And somebody,
he has the
somebody
lyrical prowess of Ace Frehley.
Well, somebody should have said, like, this is too similar to the other one, mate. And that was a single. Like, don't do another one like it. Do something else with it. Nobody stopped him. Nobody stopped him. Apparently never performed live. Tells you what you need to know. It was rehearsed
and
once.
Not a single.
It was rehearsed once. One of the rare non-singles on the album. How about that? We say it that way. We just find a way to spin it properly. Rehearsed once with Queen and Adam Lambert before they rocked Big Ben live. Whatever the fuck that means for Queen Forever. Wrap it up, son. One last one.
All right, Brian May. Let's get epic. Let's get operatic. And again, they have this big epic-y kind of song to finish out a record. Man, that sounds familiar. Man, have they ever done that?
Time and time again. They do hit certain beats. You know, so we used to talk about Metallica.
Yeah, Metallica's the exact
same. Metallica's like, here's the track sequence for every record. Yeah. Oh, yeah, all right, guys. Like, here's what we're going to do. A fast one, and then a medium
title
fast
track.
One.
No.
Title
fast
track.
One, title track, medium rocker, ballad.
Like, every time. And it works every time. Because that's what King Diamond did. That's what Motorhead kind of did, except ballads, no. And that's what we do. Lars.
Yeah, and that's... Queen has created, and in their minds, perfected a record. What a record should be. I'm going to say some very harsh things. And before I say those harsh things, I want to say this really nice, loving thing. This is not a bad record. It's got some garbage.
Did we comment on the song at all? The Teo Toriate?
I don't need it. Do you need it? I mean,
it's to their fans in Japan, which is nice, but I don't.
Okay, great. I'm sorry. I am the most cosmopolitan American you're going to meet in the Midwest. And I am an otaku, and I don't care.
Fair enough.
I'm still an American. I am still America-centric. It's just how we grow up here. I'm sorry. I'm working on breaking the programming. I'm not there yet. So, anywho, there are some great songs on here. Just like last week with A Night at the Opera, A Day at the Races has some super high highs. Nothing as low as Seaside Rendezvous or Lazing on a Sunday Afternoon, thank Christ. But overall, Queen doesn't make good records. They are like Iron Maiden to me. They are like Kiss. They make some great songs. And these guys have no clue how to sequence a record. None. They know to put the rocker at the first track on the first side and the first track on the second side. And then after that, they're like, well, we don't know what to do. Roger says he's going to sing one. Does anybody tell him that it sounds just like the last one? No, nobody mentioned it. Does he know? Did he know that he just changed the lyrics to the first song? I mean, like, they're looking at each other while they're playing this going, oh, really? We're doing this again? We just did this.
In fairness to Queen, still one of the greatest bands ever.
Completely.
Most bands of the 70s also don't know how to write a complete record. Rarely write a complete full
also,
record.
Like I said about Kiss earlier, Kiss is one of my absolute favorite bands. Top five favorite band for me. They don't have a good record. They don't have one. The best one they have is the one everybody hates the most, and that's Carnival of Souls. Because it's the only thing that sounds like one record all the way through. They have 20.
Go back and listen to the Ghost Cult Magazine End of the Road Wrap-Up Roundtable. I'll link it in the description here because now it's worth going back to revisit a little bit later. I think we're going to do another roundtable on Slayer soon, so I will probably ask to include you.
I've heard of them.
You might know who they are. Do you have any other thoughts on this? I can give my quick summary. Better than the last record?
Better than the last record and not as good. Not better than the last, not as good as the first two. Unless you average it. I mean, if you average out the songs.
It's not a math problem. It's not the median. Is it good or not? This is a better record than the last record,
a good record with some absolutely amazing songs.
This record has 110 and a bunch of 876. Last record has two 10s or a 10 and a 9 and a bunch of 2s. What's the Carlin? He's like, I never fucked a 10.
But hey, one 39 night, was at least a 6.
One night, I fucked 5 twos. And that's got to count for something.
Well, I mean, five times, he was pretty old. That's a lot.
I mean, he meant when he was younger. Yeah, this isn't needed. Still. This isn't needed. But all right, pretty great record. I do love Somebody to Love a lot. And some of these other songs are okay. By the way, like, again, what was the one you didn't like that was the rocker? The second one?
White Man.
No, not that one.
Take My Breath Away?
Good Old Fashioned Lover Boy charted at number 17 in the U.S. So it was a bona fide hit. A top 20 17? Hit song. As high as 17 in the USA.
That's pretty good.
So technically, that Somebody to Love was number 2. Tie Your Mother Down was in the, like, 30s. And actually, somehow, Good Old Fashioned Lover Boy is a bigger hit than Tie Your Mother Down. I don't even know how that's possible, but it is.
That's because everybody was high on the reefers.
They were high as fuck. And all the schneef, and all the reefer, and all the booze, and all the love, and no condoms, and no nothing.
No STDs to talk about. Just, you know, whatever.
Oh, they had them. They just didn't know what they were.
They just didn't talk about them. Nothing to talk about.
I'm itchy all the time. Even when I change my clothes, I burned all my underwear, and I stopped wearing underwear, and I still scratch all the time. What do you think that is? Bro, you have crabs. I don't know what that is. You have it, though.
I look. There's no crabs. I would see them. Crabs are big.
I don't know.
Real quick. This is not only bona fide singles hit. This is a bona fide hit in America. This goes certified platinum in the United States. It goes certified platinum in the Netherlands. It goes gold in Germany. Certified platinum in Canada. It is a worldwide hit. I wouldn't call it a phenomenon, but it probably sold about 3 million copies worldwide contemporarily. And that's pretty significant. So the fans liked it. The critics liked it. They got to tour the world. It's a success by any measure, unless you count some of the songs.
You know what we're learning about in these, like, as we do more and more of these, Nick? We're learning that a lot of these albums are very incomplete, and people still bought them by the millions load.
That's because there was no other competition. In 1976, if you wanted home entertainment, all you had were the songs on the radio. You didn't have Vigigames. The term blockbuster didn't even exist in 1976. There was no summer blockbuster season until 1979 with Jaws. No video games, no home movies yet. We're a couple of years out from Betamax becoming a thing. So yeah, people bought albums by the metric truckload. And they went, look, you know, they're at this point in time, they're $3. The minimum wage is 75 cents. You could buy a record for every part-time shift you worked. Gas was only like $8 for, it was like $8 to fill up 3 cars. I mean, Americans were making good money. Everybody was still in unions. They had there was a lot of disposable income back in the 70s. And it was, especially if you were a straight white male, it was a great time. But now, and the thing about music now is there's so much more competition. It's not just the FCC Act of 1996. It's not just the piracy, which got easier and easier. It's the competition. Movies became a much bigger part of our lives in the 90s. Video games became a much bigger part of everyone's lives rather than a nerd niche market. It's the world changed. The world changed dramatically in the 1990s for home entertainment options. So I'm going to ramble. I'm going to shut up. Take us home.
You have been listening to the Glacially Musical Podcast, our weekly podcast about beer, metal, and swearing, sometimes NHL hockey, sometimes some minutiae about things, often vinyl nerdism. Lots of context, which we are experts at giving the context and probably not actually getting to the facts, but we give the context like a mofo, yo. I am thrilled to be joined by my dear friend and the regular host of the Glacial Musical Podcast, Nick Cameron. You can find him at all the things. Occasionally, it's Nick_no_C. Please help him get off Twitter by following him other places, Glacially_musical, Glacially Musical, and other things. I am Ghost Cult Keefy of GhostCultMag.com. You can follow me at Ghost Cult Keefy. That's KEEFY. At Ghost Cult Mag. Everywhere else, GhostCultMag.com for metal news and stuff that doesn't suck. You have been listening to the Glacially Musical Podcast. It does not play in Peoria, but do you know who is the favorite son of Peoria? Richard Pryor.
Rocky Thompson.
Richard Pryor.
Fair enough. He's everybody's favorite son.
I don't think so. Berkeley and Peoria can claim him.
Fair enough.